At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Ridge Hunter Outdoors podcast. This one is number 127. We got Grant Forney on this week from the Everyday Outdoorsman YouTube channel. Grant has been producing content for the better part of the last decade. Plus, he has been in the YouTube outdoor landscape as it's kind of progressed and evolved and changed into what it is today. So he's got some really good perspective on that. We talked a lot of content stuff. We went, you know, kind of through his whole background in creating on YouTube and how it's changed and where it's going. Talked about the different kind of hunting that they do out in Pennsylvania as well. Of course, we got his background also, kind of how he got started in hunting. So I think it was a really good show. I think you guys are going to enjoy the conversation. So let's get into it on episode number 127. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. Let's just start right there, man. We always like to kind of find out, first of all, like, who got you into hunting? So, obviously, for a lot of people, dad, grandpa, uncles, was it a friend? Did you kind of get into it by yourself? Let's just go all the way back to where you first started hunting. Who or what got you into it in the first place?
Yeah, no, for me, it was, probably a similar introduction, to most guys. My dad got me into hunting when I was 12 years old. Grew up hunting private land. When I was really young, my grandparents bought some land and built a cabin up in northern Pennsylvania, the state that I'm from here. And so that was where my dad started, myself and all my brothers, into hunting, was there on our family's land in the northern part of the state. Yeah, grew up hunting there, kind of throughout my teenage years. And then, just kind of fell in love with it right from the start. Mm-hmm. And it just grew from there into a huge passion.
So what kind of stuff were you hunting there when you started out? Because, I mean, we've had everything from bears to grouse to squirrels and rabbits. So what did you kind of really start on?
Yeah, it was deer hunting for me was mm-hmm. what I started on. That was really almost it. I mean, I did a little bit of small game hunting. Actually, yeah, that's not true. My dad did take us squirrel hunting. Mm-hmm. He took us small game hunting a little bit. So we did that. Even like I would have been along with him squirrel hunting probably before I was even deer hunting, before I was even 12 years old. Right. So we did that. And then the main thing was deer hunting, once I turned 12. And then, some more small game hunting, but that was pretty much it. I really didn't grow up turkey hunting or bear hunting when I was a kid. It's pretty much small game and deer.
Yeah. So did you start out gun hunting them, rifle, shotgun, whatever? I don't exactly know what it is in Pennsylvania even, but mm-hmm. Did you start gun hunting or was it bow hunting immediately or when did you roll into that?
Yeah, no, it was gun hunting. My first 2 years, I believe it was only gun hunting. And then I started bow hunting when I was 14. So I guess my third hunting season was when I started chasing them with the bow a little bit too. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, first couple of years were just gun hunting. And I think that was, probably a good introduction. Not that you can't start off bow hunting right away, but it's probably good for me to kind of ease into it, just kind of learn, some of the basics from my dad about just deer and just the woodsmanship and everything, before jumping right into to the hardest means of hunting.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that's a pretty natural progression for a lot of people probably. Like that's probably some of the most common for especially deer hunters. Like obviously they start start hunting deer, or maybe there were some small game mixed in, but they start with the gun, and then, like you said, you kind of figure out the animal, and you get your woodsmanship built up, you kind of figure out what to do in the woods, and then you go to bow hunting, and it's like, you can get kind of successful at gun hunting, so that helps too. Like, I think a lot of times if you start a kid out on bow hunting, it is so difficult that they could probably get frustrated with it really fast and quit with gun hunting. Not that it's easy, but obviously it's easier than bow hunting. So you can get that taste of success too. And then it's kind of like the natural progression of it gets you hooked. And then, okay, I want something a little more challenging, at least for a lot of people, I think. And then you move into bow hunting. And then, I mean, we all know the challenges that go along with that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, I totally agree. I think, you know, that's a good progression for a lot of kids to kind of be on. And, you know, even then, like even though I gun hunted a couple years before I bow hunted, obviously I still, just like most people, once I did start bow hunting, I mean, I had to make a lot of mistakes, you know, to learn and learned a lot of those mistakes the hard way. But, you know, that's just kind of the way it goes sometimes.
It is. I think you have to have that to become a hunter at any skill level, I guess, for lack of a better term. But like, the more mistakes you make, I think the better you get, as long as you're willing to kind of recognize them and pay attention to them and get better, right? Like, you're going to mess up. It's bow hunting. It's going to happen. But it's what you do after that. And I think that, again, just kind of a natural progression as a hunter to screw things up as bad as possible and then learn from it, move on, and get better.
For sure. Yeah, no, I totally agree.
So obviously you do some filming and stuff like that, and we'll get into that a little bit more in depth, but is that something that you started out doing earlier, or was there someone you knew doing that, or what do you think kind of led you to that?
Yeah, it was something I started doing when I was pretty young, and it's hard for me to pinpoint exactly one moment where I was like, you know, I want to do this now, or like, it's hard for me to pinpoint exactly what it was that led me to that. Like, I remember just being a kid, like I always loved watching hunting shows on TV.
Oh yeah.
Then I discovered YouTube, you know, and that there was some hunting content on YouTube. Mm-hmm. That was back, you know, so long ago, before YouTube was even really that popular. Yep. Like, YouTube still kind of in its early stages, and so there just wasn't a lot of hunting content on there. I kind of discovered that, and like, didn't even really realize until that point that like anybody could start a YouTube channel and start posting content. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of when I learned that. And at some point, you know, around when I was 14, like I had been hunting for a couple of years, and at some point I must've just had the idea of like, it'd be cool to have a place to document all my adventures, you know, hunting and fishing, whatever it is, just kind of all my outdoor adventures, and share them like with friends and family, you know, and show some other people like, you know, hey, here's this hunt I had, and like, you know, or show friends that didn't hunt, show them my adventures, and try to show them like a little bit of what I do and why I love the outdoors so much. And so, yeah, at some point I had that idea. And so that was kind of what it started as, was just a place to film adventures, put, you know, a place to document them, share them with friends and family. And, you know, unexpectedly, it kind of just grew from there, you mm-hmm. know, year by year. It really, you know, other people started to watch that I, you know, didn't really expect to watch. And, you know, one thing led to another, and it just kind of turned into this thing I was really passionate about, you know, just, filming my adventures and mm-hmm. sharing them with people, and, you know, trying to show people, you know, like I said, trying to show people why, mm-hmm. why I love the outdoors so much, why the outdoors have been such a blessing in my life. And, just try to you know, be a good influence on people through my content. And, you know, so that was kind of just how it progressed. It kind of just slowly was this long progression over like the last 14 years, I guess. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's
really, like I said, started off and never really had a plan for it. Didn't really have a plan for what I wanted it to become, mm-hmm. or, you know, a plan for what it is now. Just kind of like, it just kind of happened, you know, on its own, just through me posting content and kind of falling in love with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's something too, that I think comes through is when whoever it is doing the video and or has a channel or whatever, like when you have the passion for it, because we talked about bow hunting being a challenge all in itself. When you start mm-hmm. trying to film stuff too, that adds a whole nother level to it. Like you can just, anybody can go out there with the camera and film something and it be on camera, but like, who knows what you actually got. But if you're, like you said, passionate about it and you're trying to do it well so you can share that with people, that's a whole nother challenge. And you do have to have that drive and want to do it, because if not, number one, you're not going to do it for very long, because you're just going to get tired of trying to do it. And number two, nobody's going to want to watch it because you don't have the drive and the passion for it, and they don't see that. And I think a lot of people enjoy watching that aspect of it as much as whatever content you're putting out. Like, if you're passionate about it and you love doing it, it definitely comes through.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, I totally agree. And yeah, you said it perfectly. Like, if I didn't love doing this and if I wasn't passionate about it, like, mm-hmm. it would have been over a long time ago.
Oh yeah.
Like, it's just way too much work to be doing it if you don't love it and if you're not passionate about it. So
yeah, it's one thing to take a camera out there too and film something. That's work all in itself, but then it's even more work when you start trying to talk about any kind of editing and uploading and all that kind of in that space too. Yeah. I mean, it's
for sure.
It is a big workload, and then you're trying to get out there and hunt throughout the season and put your time in the stand, and it definitely does become another, almost like a burden, but at mm-hmm. the same time, like you said, you have the passion for it, so you continue to do it.
Yeah. No, I mean, you said it perfectly. That's spot on for sure.
So did you start out, obviously you started on YouTube, and I remember like what you're talking about when kind of YouTube was first a thing, and there wasn't very many videos on it, and then it seemed like it took a while to get hunting videos on it, and even then you're talking like 360p videos, you know, pretty low quality. Some, like, one of the ones I remember on repeat that I used to watch was like a Luminoc video or something, just horrible quality, but it was like the best thing that I found on the internet, on YouTube or whatever. So like, to see the progression of where that's come from, because like when we were kids, it was the Outdoor Channel, right? Like, that's where everything was, Sportsman's Channel, whatever else was on at the time. But then now there's so much good content on YouTube, and you've been, I mean, like you said, you've been kind of doing video and stuff for 14 years. So you've kind of had a front row seat, I guess, for how far that's come, just seeing it based on what you were doing and what's out there now.
Yeah, no, it's been very interesting, you know, to see how things have played out, like, from my perspective, because back then I just remember it, like you said, it kind of was all about, you know, the Outdoor Channel and the Sportsman Channel and the, you know, the hunting shows on TV.
Even like DVDs and VHS that, you know.
You're right. Yeah, those were big too. And you know, when I first started posting a little bit of content on YouTube, I remember, I mean, you could not find that many channels that were posting hunting content. Like, mm-hmm. it was few and far between. There were a few, but it was not many, and it was nothing like it is today. And so, yeah, there's just been this shift kind of in the way that people watch their content now, mm-hmm. you know, where it's kind of, you know, slowly over time it happened. Well, I guess you could argue that happened pretty quickly, but you know, people caught on to YouTube and started watching that, shifting away from TV. Mm-hmm. And so creators have done the same thing where, you know, hunting TV hasn't gone away, but you know, more and more people now are posting, you know, content online versus, you know, trying to start a hunting TV show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been, I think, a lot of, like, for hunting specifically, I think the viewers like a lot of the YouTube content. Like, what drew them into that was just the authenticity in it and mm-hmm. the trying to think of what the word is. They could relate to it,
yep,
like a lot better than some of the hunting TV shows. Mm-hmm. And it's not that those shows weren't entertaining. I love to watch them too. And like those guys producing those shows.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
They were producing them in a way, like, I don't blame those shows for doing anything they did. They were producing content that, you know, that they thought was entertaining for viewers, and it was. Mm-hmm. And they did a great job, but once viewers had a way to watch content that was more relatable, I think a lot of people kind of gravitated towards that. Yep. Like just some of the, you know, the content that is, whether it's hunting on public land or hunting, you know, mm-hmm. private properties by permission, or just hunting, you know, your family's small farm or whatever it may be, was just a lot more relatable to the viewers than what some of the shows were mm-hmm. were showing on TV.
Yeah, and I, like you said, I understand what they were doing, and I get part of it. I think a big part of that was, obviously, when you're putting those shows on TV, you're paying a ton of money for that spot. So there has to be an aspect of it where you're like, you have to have your product placement. You have to talk about them because that's how you pay for your shows. You sell these advertisements, right? And you have your sponsorship dollars. Whereas on YouTube, I mean, obviously, you're wanting to do that to supplement what you're doing and try to make better content. But it's not the driving force, I don't think, like it is on TV. And there's, like you said, so there can be more authenticity to it. And you can you can go either extremely short form, which people like, or you can go a little more long form. Because on TV, you're talking, if you got a 30-minute show, then you're talking like 15 to 20 minutes of actual TV, maybe 15 of actual like hunting and all that. So you're missing so much where you can get that on YouTube. I mean, if you put out a 30-minute episode, it's 30 minutes of whatever you filmed for that hunt or that week or whatever it is. Yeah. So I do think that plays a big role in it, like the difference in the content. And I think you're right. People do have an appetite for that authenticity, and it's something that's relatable because, again, everybody likes to watch people shoot 200-inch deer on TV, but for such a big percentage of people that are hunting, that's not realistic.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree. And, like, I shouldn't even say like for the hunting shows, I shouldn't even say like maybe authenticity maybe wasn't even the right word. Like, it's not that those shows weren't, you know, authentic. Like,
right.
They were real. They just weren't, you know, they were just not relatable to most people. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, I want to make sure I don't, you know,
I want to make sure I make that clear,
But yeah, no, I totally agree. So yeah, it's just, to go back to your original question, it's been interesting to see that, play out, you know, mm-hmm. over the years. It's certainly been interesting.
And you now, you kind of hear people talk about oversaturation of content or whatever in the YouTube space, because there are so many channels and so much content. But in my opinion, there's still not an oversaturation of like really good content that people want to see. And it is that balance between like, okay, we want to be real and we want to show what's actually happening. But at the same time, there needs to be some kind of like production value to it. Otherwise, people are going to get bored. We have to keep their attention somehow. So while there are so many channels now and so much content out there, I still think there's a lot of space for good content creators like yourself that people are searching for. Because you go to the shows, and we met you at a show, and you talk to all these people, and everyone you talk to, and it's changed over even the last 3 or 4 years just going to them, but you ask somebody like, hey, you watch YouTube or you listen to podcasts, for example, and and whereas 3, 4 years ago, yeah, kind of a little bit. Now it's like, oh, yeah, I listen to them all the time, and I'm always looking for another good one, or I'm always, you know, wanting to watch, find another good YouTube channel to watch. So, like, even though there are so many, everybody's always still looking for another good one. Our partners at Flambeau Outdoors have some of the best solutions in the industry for your decoy and storage needs. They're focused on innovation that matters, and they build their products to last. They're probably most known for their whitetail, waterfowl, and turkey decoys, and that's for good reason. They've got a lot of quality options at great price points in each category. The Boss Buck is a personal favorite of mine in their whitetail line, and I've been throwing their Stormfront mallards in front of duck blinds for years now. Don't sleep on their storage solutions either, though. Whether it's fishing tackle, firearms, ammo, or archery equipment, they've got you covered. They just stepped up their archery storage game, too, with the new Formula Bow Case. It might just be the best bow case on the market, and I'm really excited to use it this season and for years to come. Make the most of your time outdoors with Flambeau. Realism that gets results. If you guys plant food plots and you don't know who Grandpa Ray Outdoors is, you need to look him up. They specialize in providing the best nutrition for whitetail deer on your property, starting with the soil. They've got a full line of high-quality food plot seed and plant foods with over 14 different food plot blends to choose from. You won't have any trouble finding what you're looking for. They've got fall and spring blends, corn and beans, switchgrass, liquid fertilizer, soil test kits, you name it. When it comes to planting, they've got it. They're not just about selling their products, though. They were started in 2015. John, the owner, has been in the business since 1991. So with that knowledge that he's acquired, he's going to be able to answer any questions you have about what blends would be best for your specific property. That way you can achieve the best results possible. Like us, John and his team don't believe in a cookie-cutter approach to wildlife nutrition. They're going to treat you and your situation individually. We've used tons of their seed on client properties, on our own properties, and the results have always been as good, if not better, than advertised. That's why we partnered with them in the first place. If you want to, go to GrandpaRayOutdoors.com, use the discount code RHOPODCAST, that's all lowercase, no space, and you get 5% off your entire order there. You guys need to go check them out if you care about getting the most bang for your buck when it comes to your food plots.
Yep. Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I think, like you said, it is very, you know, very filled with lots of people putting out content, but it's definitely not all good content. Mm-hmm. And like you said, I think there's still certainly room for more quality content. And that's like why it's still possible. Like you will still find, you know, whether it's a YouTube channel or a podcast that just gets going now, or, you know, just got going recently, that grows pretty quickly because they're putting out really good content, and they, you know, they kind of found a little niche or something that, mm-hmm. you know, makes them unique. And, they do really got a good job at kind of, that thing that makes them unique. And so, yeah, no, I totally agree. There's definitely still room for more good content. And I don't think that YouTube and podcasts and kind of the whole social media, you know, craze or phase that we've seen happen, I don't think that it's done growing. I think it's only going to probably keep going from here.
Yep. I agree. And there are, you kind of said it there, like they find their niche or whatever. There's so many different routes you could go down, like whether it is the public land thing, or whether you're a private land guy, or whether you do a little bit of both, or there's so many different little groups or little spaces within the outdoor hunting space, like that you can find an audience and build a following and stuff like that, even with everybody else out there. And then, like you said, again, it's finding something that makes you unique as well.
Right. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing, is just being yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and just doing things the way that, like, if you're going to create content, like just do it the way that you want to, and, mm-hmm. and be yourself. Like, don't do it, you know, just as, I'm almost not sure what I'm trying to say, but hopefully you get the point. Like, I think that's the biggest thing, is just, you know, have your own style and don't try to copy, you mm-hmm. know, anyone else's. you gotta be unique in your own way. And like you said, there's a lot of different ways to do that. But like when I started creating content, I didn't, you know, I think maybe one mistake people make is like trying to choose like a niche or a way to make themselves unique when that's not even like who they are. They're just choosing that because they're like, oh, I see a spot for that, you know, and no one else doing this type of thing. I guess that's not completely wrong, but you know, you're probably going to have more fun with it if you kind of stick to just who you are and what your natural style is to begin with, and don't seek out a certain style just because it seems like no one's producing content, you know, on that specific style. And so, you know, like when I first started creating content, like there was nothing that changed about like what I did or the way I hunted or the way I did anything. It was just like, I started creating content of what I already did and the way I already did things, you know?
Yeah.
So that just kind of became, you know, my style and my style of content, you know?
Yeah. And like you said, if there is that void, like if the void is a round hole and you're a square peg, it's still not going to fit. And while you are going to have some influence from like the channels you like or the shows that you watch, I do think the best way, because we get asked this question quite a bit, like, well, how do I do that? How do I become like how can I be unique or what can I make myself stand out? And it's just like what you just said, just be yourself and do your thing, because us as individuals, we're all unique in whatever own little way we have, you know? So like if you're being yourself, while yes, there are some things that are going to be inherently similar to other channels potentially, and most of the time, I mean, we're all doing similar stuff, so there are going to be some overlap, but if you're just being yourself, no one else is going to be exactly like that. And if people like that, that's how you're going to grow. That's, to me, that's the easiest thing you can do to create something unique, is just, like you said, be yourself and do it the way that you want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's exactly right.
Yeah. And I want to get into your channel a little bit too, but while we're on this topic, I'm sure you've been asked the same thing. Another question we get a lot is like, especially at these shows, people see us doing the YouTube channel or doing a podcast and they want to start something or they want to do it. And the question we always get asked is, well, how do I start or where do I start? And it's like, well, just start. That's kind of my answer to them. Our phones today take such great video. Like, just do something to start. Like we talked about just a minute ago, there is so much content. It's not all good content. Even most of the good content didn't start out that way. Like they started somewhere and then they grew and got better and better and better, right? So like just start and make those mistakes in that, just like you did when you started hunting, and then learn from them and grow from them. Do your research, talk to people, meet people, and try to get better at it. But that's what we always tell them. I'm sure you've been asked similar questions.
Yeah. No, and we have been asked that, and you're exactly right. Like you cannot start or tell yourself, well, I'm going to wait to post content until I have something filmed and edited that's like, you know, TV quality and this masterpiece of a production. Like, it's just not realistic to do that. You just have to get started somewhere. And that's how it is, like you said, for anyone who has done anything like this. Like, you just have to start somewhere, and you're going to learn as you go and improve as you go. Like it's been a crazy journey, you know, for me, just, you know, what I've learned since I've first started filming content, and just, you know, you just learn as you go. And it's like you said, you just got to get started in some type of way, you know. Don't worry about how awesome the quality is from the start.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of, you just kind of started on a little bit there. I want to talk about, or have you talk about, kind of your journey from when you did start filming content to now. What's kind of that evolution look like for you from, and I know you said you kind of started doing it to show friends or family or whatever, and then you got more people watching it. But like, as far as the filming and the editing aspect of it, when did you really start to dive into that stuff? And what did that look like from the beginning to where you are now?
Yeah, I would say I gotta go. This is always fun to answer questions like this because I gotta go back into my memory far. But
yeah, right.
But yeah, I first started filming, you know, on I gotta remember, like, the first year I even ever started posting content, it was like I was basically just carrying a camera in the woods with me, like one of my dad's old cameras that like ran on a disc.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of carrying that in the woods with me to film like different things that I would see. I wasn't even set up like with the proper equipment yet to like try to self film a kill shot, mm-hmm. you know? So just kind of carrying a camera around that first year, filming some stuff, kind of just piecing some videos together of like wildlife I would see in the woods and like film some fishing that year and stuff like that. And then the next year, I think it was my second year that I upgraded the camera slightly, had a camera arm to like properly, you know, mm-hmm. or at least attempt to self film a hunt,
mm-hmm.
and also had.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Editing software on my computer to be able to actually do a little bit more to, you know, piece together
right,
you know, some type of a decent video. And I did that, you know, I ran with that setup for, I'm trying to think, probably maybe 3 or 4 years or mm-hmm. maybe 4 or 5 years, even something like that. And you know, each year just kind of tried to just fine tune my skills. Like, as I started to see that more and more people were watching, as I started to learn, like, hey, this is something I really enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to improve at it. Like, naturally, I just wanted to get better at it. And so I tried to just improve my skills with filming and videography as well as editing, you know, and just, you know, improve my skills at just being on camera, things mm-hmm. like that. Anything I could do to do a better job, I was trying to do it. And then around, let me think. Yeah, probably, like I said, probably did, maybe had that set up for like 5 years as far as my equipment. And mm-hmm. then around 2017, some point when I was in college, me and a couple other guys kind of dove in a little bit more and started upgrading our filming equipment, our cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So we bought a better camera at that point, started adding in some GoPros and second angles for our hunts. And so that was kind of when it became even more serious. Yet there's, and it's really been that way year after year. Like, it just kind of progresses over time.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that moment, kind of committing to spending a little bit of hard-earned money, you know, on upgrading the equipment, was definitely, you know, an investment and you know, kind of a moment where I was like, all right, like, this is going to be more serious now. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're gonna upgrade this and
start investing a little bit of more money into it.
Right. Yep. Right. Yeah. And, so then a couple years after that, I would say, you know, almost every year, maybe not every year, but, you know, slowly we've just upgraded our equipment and cameras, you know, over the years, or added or tweaked it, I should say,
right,
you know, with different things and you know, added a couple more cameras into the mix a few years after that. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, recently here we've been running with the same equipment here for the last number of years.
Yeah.
Upgraded, you know, like I said, tweak some things, upgrade some second angle cameras, or, you know, little gadgets here and there, but, you know, so yeah, been just like everything else, been a progression for sure.
No doubt.
Always, every year just tried to, you know, even aside from the equipment, like just trying to kind of fine tune your skills, you know, as you learn more and as you make mistakes and just kind of, you know, learn as you go.
Yeah. So did you start as the everyday outdoorsman, and when did that come about? Was it there from the beginning?
No. So that wasn't first. It started off, the name of my account was just like under my name, mm-hmm. and then my personal name. And then at one point, I can't remember exactly what the timing was. There was a number of years where the channel was called Pennsylvania Outdoors Unlimited. Mm-hmm. And then we decided to make the name change to the Everyday Outdoorsman, I think in 2018. So about 6 years ago, mm-hmm. we decided to make that name change. So,
yeah. So you were into it a little bit by then even.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, we were into it. We were into it for sure. We just, kind of made the decision that a different name would maybe, you know, help us out with just, mm-hmm. reaching more people and, you know, not kind of hold us specifically.
Yeah, don't pigeonhole yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, kind of had thought about that for a while, just had not really come up with a name we really felt like was meant for us until we kind of came up with that one. So,
yeah,
so that's probably here to stay now for our name.
Right. Right. I think that adds to the relatability thing too. Cause like you said, like, you know, everyday outdoorsman, that's all of us, right? Or most of us, especially the ones mm-hmm. that are going to be consuming the type of content that you guys are putting out. And
yep.
I'm not going to mention any names, but it also is important that it fits you guys, because there are some channels or shows out there that have names that, like, they want to act like they're a certain thing, but really, if you've met them in person or you've seen them out, like, you know, that's not who they really are. And
yeah.
I do think people see through that at some point.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. No, you're right.
And when you put so much content out there, like, there's no hiding. At some point, it's gonna show who you really are, what it really is. So, like, it's important to come up with something that does fit you, because once you lose those people, like, over something like that, they're not coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like you said, you definitely want to have something that fits you and kind of, you know, matches what you do and the type of content you do. You know, if you don't have it figured out right away, that's okay too. You know, you can change it, you know, at some point, like I did, but, mm-hmm. You know, it's probably a good idea to try to think that through as early as you can.
Right. Yeah. Those branding changes are not easy.
Yeah.
But so you guys kind of started doing that in 17, 18, somewhere in there. What was the goal, like, from that point, and when you started getting serious about it, was it to just make the best content you could, or, like, did you have something in mind that you wanted to get to, or, like, what did you kind of decide early on that would be your goal for the channel and everything?
I would say, you know, at that point, it became somewhere around that time frame was, like, when it started to shift from, like, okay, this is more than just something that we're going to use to show, like, it's more than just a platform to show our friends and family our hunts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit more now than just for our own enjoyment. Like, at that point, the goal kind of became, like, there was a realization I had that, like, I had a platform that I had an opportunity to influence people with.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, at that point, the goal became, like, let's use the platform that we have in a positive way to, you know, hopefully, show people, kind of like I mentioned earlier, show people why we're so passionate about the outdoors, why the outdoors have been a big blessing in our lives, show the fun that's in hunting in the outdoors. And if we're reaching some people and having some people watch our content that aren't involved in the outdoors, hopefully inspiring those people to maybe want to learn more about it or at some point give it a try. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what the goal became at that point. And like, and for the people watching our content that were already hunters and are already involved in the outdoors, just being a good and a positive influence on those people as well. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of the best way that I could answer that question.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and that's still what, you know, still really what it is now.
Yeah. You're probably kind of seeing that play itself out too, right? Like you're starting to reach those goals that you set for yourself and having that positive influence and everything, which is, you know, I mean, it's really nice to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Gratifying, nice. I guess, in a certain way. And a lot of times that's kind of used with a negative connotation, but definitely positive in this aspect.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. It's been, it's definitely, you know, definitely something that I'm thankful for to kind of have the opportunity to post content and have people watching it and enjoying it and having an influence on people and just to, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like just kind of thankful for that opportunity. Yeah. And, you know, so it's something that I don't take lightly and take it pretty seriously and try to do the best that I can with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's obviously a lot of people that do watch you guys' content, but I'm sure we got some listeners that don't. So if they're sitting around again, looking for that good content, what brings them to the Everyday Outdoorsman channel? Obviously you've kind of touched on some things that you guys are trying to do. And we talked about on being unique, just being yourself, but what is that about you guys that people enjoy or why they should come watch your guys' channel? Not to like put you on the spot, but
no, that's okay. So what, you know, I would say what we do is we're posting, you know, our main thing is we're posting deer hunting content. Mm-hmm. Some other times of the year we'll have some other content like turkey hunting and some fishing, but our main thing we're doing is deer hunting content. And I would say specifically what makes us unique is we don't really have, like when it specifically comes to our deer hunting, we don't really have one style that we stick to. We do a few different or several different types of hunting. So we're located, we live in PA. So we hunt Pennsylvania. We also hunt Maryland. Mm-hmm. And we hunt some public land, we hunt some private land, we hunt some big woods and mountains, we hunt some farmland, some flat land, you know, mm-hmm. some rolling hills, places with woodlots and fields. So we hunt a lot of different terrains, a lot of different different places and scenarios throughout the hunting season. Mm-hmm. And we gun hunt, we muzzleloader hunt, we bow hunt. So it's kind of like in some ways it seems like we kind of do it all. Like when it comes to deer hunting in mm-hmm. our area, we kind of do a little bit of everything here, you know, within a few hours in every direction of where we live.
Yeah. And so you got a little bit of something for everybody, kind of.
Right. We kind of got a little something for everybody, and we don't really, I would say what makes us relatable is, yeah, we do have, you know, hopefully something that everybody can relate to. And I think another thing too, that makes us relatable is like, we don't really travel much to do hunts that are far away. Not, I mean, some guys do that and that's fine. And I'm not saying I'll never do that, but like, I would say most hunters, what they do is like, they hunt the majority of the deer hunting season, like close to where they live, you know, they're hunting the public land that's within a day trip from their house, or they're hunting, you know, a farm they have permission on. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, not too far from where they live. And that's, for the most part, that's exactly what we're doing too. Like we're not 1 year deciding to take a trip and hunt, go down south and hunt. And the next year we're hunting the Midwest. And the next year we're hunting the Northeast. Like, if that's your style, that's fine. And I'm sure there's a lot of fun things about that, but, that's not really our style.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one thing that makes us relatable, is kind of just sticking to our home area and our home turf and kind of learning and trying to get better at hunting these areas, you know, right around us.
Yeah. No, that definitely makes sense too, because like you said, most guys are getting off work on a Friday afternoon, or they're going out on a Saturday and a Sunday to hunt, and they're 20, 30 minutes from the house because that's where they can go hunt. And not everybody, yep. a majority of hunters don't have the ability or the time to go out of state or travel long distance to do it. And like you said, that's right. It is entertaining to watch, and like I want to do some of it as well. And
right.
I got buddies that do it, and it's definitely something that I want to pursue at some point. But most people, and like right now I'm one of those people, just can't take the time to do it, you know, whether it's away from work or family or both, whatever it is. It's, most people are hunting 20, 30 minutes from their house, you know, and they're doing just like what you're doing. They're trying to figure out their own little space and hunt it the best they can and try to be successful on that, not worrying about all kinds of different places where they might be going to hunt. Like, even if it's a little public land spot, most of their hunting time is put into figuring out that public area and where they can go get away from pressure and find those deer on it and be successful in their area. If you guys are looking for your own piece of ground to manage and hunt, Rodney Hawkins is a guy you need to talk to. He grew up hunting and fishing in Southern Illinois, and he's now putting that love for the outdoors into selling recreational properties as a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. Midwest Farm and Land isn't your average real estate company. They do residential properties, but they also do a ton of recreational property sales as well. Rodney himself sold over $7 million worth of properties last year alone. They've got agents like him all over Illinois, so they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them, what might be available, or even getting your property listed if you're looking to get rid of one and maybe get into something else, you can contact Rodney directly at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. He's also got his own company called RG Outdoors that currently has products from Radix Hunting, Tacticam Trail Cameras, Camo Dust, and he's adding new stuff all the time. So if you're interested in any of that, go over to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors, email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153. Hey, everybody, I appreciate you tuning in for another episode. If you don't already, go over to Instagram and Facebook and give us a follow at Ridge Hunter Outdoors. We also have a private Facebook group called Ridge Hunter Nation where you guys can have some input on the show. You can ask us questions. You can ask upcoming guests questions. You can tell us who you want us to have on and what you want us to talk about. And on top of all that, just use it as a regular hunting group. Share your stories, your success, pictures, your failures, whatever it is. That's all at Ridge Hunter Nation on Facebook. Our website is ridgehunteroutdoors.com. That's where you're going to find more info on the consulting and management services that we provide. We also have the podcast posted on the website with some other content as well. And we have our merchandise and our food plot seed. And if you find any of that stuff that you want, make sure you use the discount code RHOPOD. That's all caps, no space. And you get 10% off your entire order there. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere else that lets you do so, make sure you rate and review. That helps us, and give us a follow there too. YouTube, our channel is Ridge Hunter Outdoors. You can subscribe to that, hit the notification bell so you know when everything comes out. The podcast will be posted there, as is our Fall Pursuit show, which we'll have more of coming up next season. You guys can go back and rewatch everything that we did this year. We had 10 episodes on that. We're hopefully going to do some turkey hunting this spring, and of course, we'll have all our off-season content on YouTube as well. So thanks to everybody who already does follow and subscribe. If you don't, make sure you go do that. Now let's get back to the episode.
Yep. No, and I'm totally with you. Like I will probably do some hunts in the future where I travel, you know, and I think everybody has like an adventurous side in them where like that kind of stuff is fun to get out and see new places. And,
yep.
You know, I'm sure that I'll do more of that at some point, but you know, even then when I do that, it's like probably still the thing that I'll enjoy the most and the thing that I'll spend the majority of my year or the hunting season on is still probably hunting here in my local area. And I think that's the case for everybody, even the guys now that might do, you know, one or two travel hunts a year. I still think that probably the majority of most guys' hunting season is kind of right in their mm-hmm. home turf.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. So what do you guys got coming up for this year? You guys got anything you're doing off season wise or even during the season where maybe you got some specific deer you're after, some storylines or something like that? What do you guys got coming up for the channel?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I would say, you know, big picture, it's a pretty average, you know, pretty average year for us or, you know, nothing too crazy happening. Mm-hmm. We, like when the hunting season ends in January, we hunt pretty much the whole way through the end of January in Maryland. We really, really, we're the type of guys where like we like to stretch our deer season out, like as long as we can, just cause like, we just love it that much. So like we're hunting till the very end, you know, in Maryland, late January, like doing some deer drives with friends down there and, mm-hmm. You know, hunting them late season, you know, does or, you know, even bucks. But once that ends, like in February and March, we're getting out, we're doing the postseason scouting that, you know, a lot of guys do. We're bringing in trail cams, we're shed hunting. So we've done that, you know, over the last few months. And then we even do that really into April too. Mm-hmm. And then once the spring starts coming, we do a little bit of fishing, a little bit of turkey hunting. So we've been doing that about the last month or so. And then about now is when our minds kind of start shifting right back to deer.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Like over the next 3 months here, you know, we'll start getting all our trail cameras out for the year. Probably not too much in June yet. Maybe a little bit towards the end of this month is when we'll really start getting out there a little bit more. But yeah, we'll start getting cameras out and doing, you know, some summer scouting mm-hmm. on some of our public land pieces, like especially the ones that we'll hunt early season, like in September. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones where we'll kind of focus our time for the summer scouting. And then, yeah, just stuff like, you know, tweaking some tree stands, like on our private land spots. I have a little bit of that to do here this summer. And then, yeah, other than that, as far as like storylines coming into the fall, there's one deer that I'm hoping survived last hunting season that I'll be after if he did survive. So I'm looking forward to seeing mm-hmm. what happens with that. Mm-hmm. That's on a public land spot here in Pennsylvania. I'm actually excited about the spot that I hunted that deer. Even if that deer's not alive, I'm excited about the area that I hunted him in. So looking forward to getting a couple cameras in there, mm-hmm. kind of monitoring that deer or any deer that are in that spot. And then outside of that, I've got some deer on some of my private land spots that I know survived mm-hmm. last year. So I'll be back hunting those deer again. I've got a few deer on private land that I've hunted now for at least 2 or 3 years. You know, some of them are getting pretty old, so they're going to be tough ones to figure out, but yep. I'll still give it a whirl for sure. So
yeah
that's kind of you know, that's kind of what our summer and fall will be looking like. We're not doing anything too out of the ordinary, you know, for our hunting season. Just going to be hitting it hard as always here in Pennsylvania and Maryland, you know, just getting out as much as we can, having fun with it and you know, doing what we all love.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. So we've had Steve Shirk on the show several mm-hmm. times, and obviously he's from out there in Pennsylvania as well.
Yep.
And he talks about a lot of the public land stuff that you guys are doing as well. And that from where we're at and from a lot of places, that big wood stuff out there where you're at is just a different ball game.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. No doubt about it. It's the big woods is a challenge. It can be low, depending exactly where you're at. It can be low deer densities.
Mm-hmm.
Not always. You can, depending where you're at, you can find some more deer, but it can be low deer densities, but there's also some big deer now, like in the big woods of Pennsylvania. If you put the work in, you can really find some pretty special deer now.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of areas of our state, as heavily hunted as it is, we do have some big deer now. They're not behind every tree,
right?
But if you work really hard, you scout really hard, if you're a public land hunter, if you really put in the scouting and and learn your areas that you're hunting, and get away from other people, you can definitely find some big deer. But you're right, it's a different ball game when you're hunting those bucks. You can go days without seeing a deer.
Yeah.
And on the third or fourth day of hunting, the first deer you see is that monster you're hunting. That's the way it can go.
That's hard for a lot of people throughout the whitetail range to grasp, because sorry to cut you off, but like sitting there for a couple of days and not even seeing a deer, when so many people that hunt whitetails are like throughout the Midwest or even in the South where they might have big deer, but there are so many deer. That's one thing to me that makes it so much different, is you could literally sit there for 2 days and not see a deer. And then, like you said, the first one you see could be that shooter, but it's just different.
Yeah, no, it totally is. And, it's not always like that. We still do have days in the big woods where you're in them, mm-hmm. you're seeing a lot of deer, but, mm-hmm. It definitely can be the other way around. And it really, really starts to affect you mentally and play mind games with you. 'Cause you really don't know, like, especially like during the rut, it's hard to know like what's going on. Like you start second guessing, like what phase of the rut is it in? Because like, I'm not seeing what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, is everything happening and I'm just not seeing it 'cause I'm in the wrong spot, or are things not happening right now? It's just so hard to kind of know like what's going on and if you're doing things right, if you're not seeing anything. And so it makes it tough, but you just gotta kind of use your best judgment and stick to your guns and trust your hard work and just try to hunt it out.
Yeah, no doubt. So I want to go back a little bit to your filming. Obviously, you've been doing this for a little while now. So what is like the craziest hunt that you've filmed and put out, or what's like maybe just your favorite hunt, that something that's happened or a big deer or whatever that you've been able to film and get it all on video, or maybe you almost got it on video? You know what I mean? What's kind of something crazy or your favorite hunt maybe?
That's a tough one. There's so many, but I do have an answer. I would say one that still sticks out, and it's hard for me to even put one hunt above all the rest. 'Cause like, there's so many that are so close to this one, I feel like, but I would say if I had to pick one, there was one when I was, it was actually the first buck I ever killed with my bow.
Mm-hmm.
Was in the fall of 2018. I was a senior in college, and I had shot at least a couple of bucks before that with my bow,
mm-hmm.
in the years prior, but I'd never got one. And that year was also the first year that I hunted Maryland, was 2018. So there was a couple of public pieces I scouted down there. And I think how that season went, it was like, I was able to take some time. I was able to find a way to, like, I don't know how I did this, but for a couple of years there in college, there was a way that I was able to find. I was able to find a way to skip a lot of class.
Listen, we all did a lot of that in college. You just yeah. figured out a way, you know.
Yeah, like somehow I figured out a way to miss like a week of class. I don't know how I did that, but like I hunted the rut. I hunted like the best week. What I thought would be the best week of the rut, mm-hmm. like the second week of November, up at my cabin, my family's cabin, which is still, you know, probably my favorite place to hunt because it's where I first started. But mm-hmm. I hunted like a week straight up there, or something like that, and like was seeing a couple nice deer. Like came so close to like, I mean, you know how it is. Like it, sometimes mm-hmm. it's just like you're having close encounter after close encounter, and it feels like a miracle that like you didn't get one.
Yeah. You know? Right. Like how did I not kill that deer?
How did I not kill one? Yep. Like on this trip. And that was like how that trip went. And then that was kind of like my main chunk of time to hunt that November. And cause then archery ended in PA. And then that next weekend was like, I think it was, the date was like November 17th. Mm-hmm. And it was a Saturday. It would have been right after archery ended in PA. And I just had like one Saturday afternoon to hunt yet. That would be like the weekend before our gun seasons come in. Mm-hmm. I'd like one Saturday afternoon to bow hunt Maryland. And, you know, I hadn't been down to Maryland in, I can't even remember, like most of the archery season. Like I hadn't been back to that public piece since like September. Mm-hmm. Like I really hadn't stepped foot on it since then because I was just hunting PA. But I was like, well, PA's closed. I've got this Saturday free. Like, let's give it a whirl, you know, thinking like, I'm not just going to walk in here to this public piece and like, you know, probably not going to have anything good happen after just like, I hunted a week straight, like right. a place where I felt like I could get it done. And I didn't get one, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And but I'm like, you know what, obviously it's not all about killing one. It's about having fun too. So I'm like,
that's right.
I've got some time to hunt. Like, let's just go out and try it. And so I ended up hunting off the ground that afternoon. Just picked a spot that I thought would be decent and kind of hid behind a tree that had fallen over, kind of tried to just get the best hide I could mm-hmm. on the ground. And yeah, it was just set up there for the evening. Saw a couple does kind of feeding on the ridge below me. And then it's like a half an hour before dark. I kind of thought the hunt was over. And I just heard a deer cruising through the woods and looked up, and there's just like this big wide 8-pointer like cruising through this. Like I was sitting in pretty open woods too. Mm-hmm. And this was just cruising like right at me. Like he was just like on a string, like literally right at me. And
that's a good and a bad feeling.
Yeah. I was like, this is going to get real interesting here. Uh-huh. And especially get on the ground.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I started filming him coming in and grabbed my bow and got ready. And, yeah, he could not have been on more of a string right to me. Like if I had been up in a tree, like it would have been one of those things where he would have walked right under the base of my tree, mm-hmm. you know, and basically touched my tree. But since I was on the ground, he got in, you know, it's like eventually if you're on the ground, like if they keep coming right at you, eventually they're going to see you, yep. you know, like yep. there's no way around it.
Yep.
So he got into like 10 yards and stopped and he was kind of quartered to me, and like as soon as he kind of like turned his head to think about leaving, like I drew back on him, and he kind of gave me enough of an angle that I could kill him. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, that was a wild hunt. But yeah, I shot him, and he ran off. Long story short, like we ended up leaving him overnight. I brought some friends back the next morning. So that was just kind of a memory that I always remember, bringing my buddies back there the next morning. Like we were pretty sure that it was a lethal hit, you mm-hmm. know, it was just a question of being able to find him. And so, yeah, we found him that Sunday morning after not too long. And it was a real nice, you know, public land 8-pointer in Maryland, my first archery buck. And so I was fired up about that. But yeah, just a wild hunt off the ground. And actually what makes that whole thing even crazier was that that Sunday night, I got appendicitis, had to get my appendix.
Oh boy. That's crazy.
On the way home from recovering that buck, like I started to get sick.
Uh-huh.
And realizing something was wrong with me. I didn't know what it was. And so yeah, that was a whole nother side story to that weekend. Was
right.
I recovered my buck in Maryland that morning, and by 11 o'clock that night, or about midnight, I was having surgery to get my appendix removed.
That's
so I kind of remember that buck as the appendix buck.
Yep. It seems fair.
And so that was that's still maybe the hunt that sticks out to me, maybe.
Yep.
You know, the most, if I had to pick one. But I mean, gosh, there's just been so many over the years, so many fun hunts with, you know, friends, even my hunts where I wasn't even the one who mm-hmm. shot an animal. You know, there's just been, it's like crazy. Me and my friend Brandon, who, you know, films on the channel with me a lot. Mm-hmm. We joke all the time about, like, we already feel like we could almost write a book.
And right.
With all our hunting stories from the past 15 years. And it's like, gosh, what is it going to be like when we're old men? You know, we're definitely going to be able to write a book by then.
Yep.
But,
yep.
Yeah. It's awesome. Like just talking about it now, just with you, like, I mean, everybody loves talking about hunting stories.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And stuff like that. So yeah, we've got a lot of them. That's for sure. But that was definitely one that sticks out.
Cool. Man.
Still now, cool. Like 6 years later, I guess.
So, well, I'll get you out of here, man. I mean, it's been great talking to you, but where can people find these hunts? Like, obviously you've got a bunch of them on your channel. So go ahead and plug like the channel and any of your social media stuff. Just tell people where they can find you. And I'll link it all in the description of the episode too. So go ahead and tell them where they can find you at.
Yeah, no, the main thing, you know, that we do is the YouTube videos on our channel, The Everyday Outdoorsman.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook as well, at The Everyday Outdoorsman. So, you know, we're posting reels and pictures on Instagram and Facebook, and, you know, some stories, just kind of, mm-hmm. you know, updates on what we're doing throughout the season. And then on YouTube, you know, we're trying to, you know, stay pretty, you know, up to date as well, like getting our content out as quick as we can. Obviously that's a little bit less live, so to speak, than it is on the other social media platforms. But, you know, usually we're able to get hunts out relatively quickly after mm-hmm. they happen. So yeah, that's where you can find us.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time this evening to talk to us. And it's been a lot of fun. We kind of went down a little bit of a rabbit hole on I guess, the YouTube and filming stuff. But I think people enjoy that because, like I said, I always get questions about it. But again, thanks for talking to us tonight, and we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, thanks a lot for having me on. Really appreciate the opportunity to come on here. So mm-hmm. thanks for that. It was a lot of fun, and I'm definitely willing to do it anytime again.
All right, man, we will.